Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Something that we've been, you know, that's been in the news, and we've mentioned it, I think, probably about a week ago, but we never really got into the details, was this marijuana bill, the one out of Vermont, that I think is pretty great news because you finally have a state legislature actually moving forward with legalization for recreational purposes or whatever purposes you might want to use cannabis. Some people use it for recreational purposes. Some use it for medicinal purposes. Others use it for spiritual purposes. So whatever, you know, your reasons are in Vermont, things are looking up. And of course, you know, they're still behind the ball, obviously. They're still following the several states that have legalized cannabis through the ballot box by using a referendum that that people vote on. And that's, you know, that's the way the ball got rolling on this. And finally, you finally got the first state legislature in the form of Vermont that's going ahead and passing this. And the governor has said that he will be signing it. So, you know, pretty much it's a done deal, even though all of the I's are not yet dotted, all the T's are not yet crossed. This story is coming from Vermont Public Radio, where the legislature is sending its marijuana bill to Governor Phil Scott for his signature, which would make Vermont the very first state to legalize marijuana through the legislative process.
Drug prices all across the South went up after 9/11 because it became harder to bring it in.
Well, now, you know, you've got so much more competition because of the marijuana growing that's happening in many different states at this point. And as far as other drugs are concerned, you've even got the extra competition from like the darknet markets that are bringing extra levels of product quality and competition into various different markets. New ways for product to enter marketplaces that they had not existed before, because it used to be, you know, there were only so many big players in any given town, right? Like in any given city, there are only so many people who are the high level dealers. Yeah. And now anybody who's got an internet connection, you know, and the money to spend on it can, in theory, compete with some of those people.
Yeah.
And so that's a big change.
You don't really get the mark, what do you call it, the markup discounts. You know, like if you buy a gram of high-grade cannabis in Tennessee, it's $20. If you buy an eighth, it's $60.
Still about the same price.
If you buy a quarter, it's $120.
That is crazy, man.
Yeah.
That is backwards as hell.
It is. It's crazy. But, I mean, there's no competition. It's extremely high risk.
Yeah, sure.
You know, Tennessee loves busting pot dealers. I mean, I lived in a town that had the worst rate for violent crime and murder. Like solving the crimes so bad when I was a kid that Johnny Carson actually mentioned it on The Tonight Show.
Wow. We're about a half hour's drive from Vermont, where we are right now.
Right across the border.
And in six more months, Vermont is going to be legal. Now, does that mean that the doors to marijuana stores are going to throw themselves open on July 1st? I hope so, because I want to go check it out.
Yeah.
I haven't made any trips over to Colorado or Washington or anything like that, so it'll be interesting to see if Vermont gets it done before before Maine or Massachusetts, who also legalized cannabis by the ballot box in 2016. And I think one of those two states, I believe it's Massachusetts, is also expected to go live with retail shopping for cannabis purchases this summer as well. So it's going to be a race between those two states. Looks like New Hampshire's governor, unfortunately, is siding with the police. He's being a stick in the mud. And even though he supported a minor amount of decriminalization in 2017, which was a step in the right direction, he has said no thus far to legalization, and right now the state legislature doesn't appear to have the votes to do an override. Because if the governor said no, but then there was, I think it's either 60 or 66%, I forget which one. It's, you know, a fair amount, sort of super majority of the state legislature. If we had that kind of support for legalization, we'd just be able to override the governor, and then it would happen. Most law enforcement, they support the status quo. They not only support the status quo, but they support more laws. They support more enforcement. They support more tools. They support more aggression. I've seen it happen so many times at the state house, where these cops will come out and they're getting paid by the taxpayers to come out and sit in the state house hearings. I'm going to be going to some tomorrow. I guarantee you there's one at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning to abolish DUI checkpoints. And you better believe the police are going to be there with all their brass and their police chiefs association. And they're going to come out, the state police, they're going to come out and they're going to tell you how dangerous we need. We need, first of all, the federal money.
Yeah.
For the DUI checkpoints, was, yeah. we really need that federal money. But we need to keep the roads. We've got to keep the roads safe because these DUI checkpoints are helping solve. Oh, wait, no, what's that? How many DUIs have you actually busted within the last year? Oh, none? Oh, okay. So in theory, they're keeping the roads safe.
There's a fellow liberty activist, Adam Kokesh. I believe there's recently been some news that he's been arrested again for some unknown reason. I'm not sure if you guys might have the intel.
Yeah, I don't think it was an unknown reason. The story came in late last night, actually. Somebody called the very end of the show, and apparently he had gone to file for his papers to be president, to run for president of the United States, or as I believe he's been calling it, not president.
Not president.
The United States. And then apparently on his way back from doing that, the police pulled him over and somehow were able to search. I think they brought a drug dog around from the video I saw a clip of last night. The dog alerted on to the RV, of course, and they then proceeded to arrest him for four different charges. At least that was the report last night from Reason.com, which is where we were reading the story from. And one of them was possession of less than 2 ounces of cannabis. And then ostensibly there's at least one or two more drug-related charges in there, but they weren't naming what the other substances that were allegedly found in the RV. So
everybody's like placing bets on what kind of a hallucinogen was. I bet it was DMT. No, it was probably LSD. No, he had mushrooms.
I remember when years ago there was actually a hookah lounge here in Keene, New Hampshire. Little old Keene, little college town, population 23,000 when the college is in session. And there was a hookah lounge here that we would actually go to for social Sundays where the libertarians kind of get together and hang out on a Sunday evening. And it was a great location for it. It was really cool, like kind of chill atmosphere with couches and like board games and stuff like that. And it was very, very nice. And they actually had a BYOB policy because they weren't able to get the liquor license, and or at least they were trying to or whatever. And they just at that time they hadn't been successful at it. So until they were able to get the liquor license, it was BYOB. So we were bringing in whatever, you know, we wanted to. I mean, back then there were some Free Staters who were running a brewing company, and they were sponsoring Free Talk Live. So I was being sent so much alcohol as part of our payment for the advertising. I wasn't able to, you know, to even begin to drink it all. So I just bring these huge, like, what are those big old bottles of beer that are like humongous,
40.
Like at least two.
40.
Yeah, I don't know if they were that big, but they were at least 20 ounces. I mean, they were big, maybe 40.
I'm wondering if with Sununu in office, they're just going to like put gates at all the entrances to the state of New Hampshire.
To the state house, you mean?
The state of New Hampshire. From Vermont.
To try to stop the marijuana. Yeah, because there's going
to
be a lot of people crossing the border into Maine, into Mass, and Vermont.
We're completely surrounded at this point, and now we've passed, like, a bill in the New Hampshire State House has passed.
Passed the state's state representatives.
Yeah, state house, not the state senate.
Correct. We don't know what the senate's going to do.
Yeah.
At this point. And the number of representatives here was not enough to do an override on a veto. So it's probably not going to happen this year unless somebody can bribe the governor. You know, the marijuana industry can somehow change his mind.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
But I mean, at this point, the writing is on the wall. So
of course it is.
Really just got it.
If he doesn't get it together, he's going to probably lose his reelection campaign.
Either that or they're going to do, I mean, if he really wants to screw the pooch, what he can do is be like, do the Jersey and heroin thing where it was like, all right, so we have a heroin problem. What we'll do is we'll triple the criminal punishments for it, and that'll fix the problem. And instead what happened was, you know, like they ended up with like tons and tons of, you know, expense on their budget in order to incarcerate right. all these people, and that specific governor got voted out the very next election, and they put in Christie.
They say here that you may possess the two plants production as long as you keep that marijuana in a secure place and in and on your premises where you've been growing. So if you, let's say, your plants produce 4 ounces, you could have 3 ounces sort of secured there within your facility or in your house, and then for some reason you were going camping or on vacation, you could leave with up to an ounce in your personal possession, said the state senator. In other words, if you're not growing your own marijuana, then you would be, under this law, able to possess 1 ounce and no more. Hashish, you may have up to 5 grams. Now, they generally consider the hashish category to be concentrates. So if you have wax or something like that, I think that may be included, but obviously
so
I haven't read the law.
Actual hash would not be included, just concentrates?
Hash is concentrate.
That's what hash is.
Well, it's concentrated cannabis.
Well, concentrates and concentrated cannabis are different.
Okay. Well,
like
I don't know how they...
Waxes and oils would be a concentrate.
That's correct.
Concentrated cannabis, like hash, would be a little bit different. Some kinds of hash.
I haven't read the bill, so I don't know. I don't know how they categorized it. My understanding that I believe that's all the same category, but I could be wrong. Production. Per the bill, it is okay to make edibles. However, using butane or hexane to do chemical extraction is not allowed, and Pearson claims that much of that has to do with the safety of that process.
Oh, so no wax and no oil then.
I'd like to discuss something you guys were talking about yesterday, this supposed new California secession.
Yeah, we had a guy call in last night, Tom from Northern California, who's been calling for a while to kind of update us on the old state of Jefferson, which apparently there was a schism there. Which tends to happen with movements. Once a movement gets too large, people just can't get along, so they have themselves a schism, and that's what happened. And then I guess New California came out of that, and now New California is making headlines this week after having declared their independence from Old California. Now, it's kind of a weak declaration of independence. We actually read it on the air last night, because at the very end, it basically says that we are begging the state of California
for longer leashes.
Yeah, and the U.S. federal government to let them secede into the 51st state.
Well,
yeah.
How official is this? Have any counties or municipalities, or has anybody, you know, in a government level said, we don't want to be a part of California anymore?
No, I asked him about that last night, and it sounded like what they've done is they formed their own committees for each county of people who want to be New California, and so they have not gotten any kind of state representatives' explicit support as of what the interview that we did last night.
What do you think the likelihood of this happening is? Do you think this is going to gain any traction, or do you think this is something we're going to obsess over for a week and then it'll just kind of fall off?
Well,
again?
I mean, I'm certainly not obsessing over it. I didn't even know it had happened.
Well, not you specifically, but a lot of people are.
And it's going to get some news coverage, and then it's going to fall off the radar, just like the Calexit thing got some news coverage. It's going
to
fall off the radar. Yeah. They have to do something else newsworthy.
Texit got a little bit of... and then it was gone.
And it's good. I mean, I'm glad those things get news coverage because, I mean, if they're getting ignored, that's bad. The fact that they're getting coverage simply for making this, you know, weak declaration of independence out in New California is good news. It's going to bring new people to their movement. It's going to bring new eyes to their website. And it's going to get people thinking, why can't we do that where I live? Why don't we have a secession movement where I live? I mean, even whether or not they succeed at their secession attempt is really, you know, immaterial. If it gets people talking about secession, if it gets, you know, conversations happening, and we weren't going to talk about secession. We didn't even know about that story until the dude called in last night. Yep. I'm glad he did. So it's important for listeners to participate in the show, because half the time we're just doing cryptocurrency stuff all day. We don't even know what's happening in the rest of the world. Today's episode was – you had like a 2-hour long interview with
Zencash.
Zencash. Yeah. And I actually interviewed the same guy when they first started here as a sponsor on Free Talk Live, but mine was nowhere near as in-depth. I mean, it was just the two of us talking, and you had, like, programmer Rich Paul. You had programmer Chris Wade, two Free Talk Live co-hosts. They were in your studio. And then Aria, who's your cryptocurrency expert, was also on the line, and she gave him an A-plus rating.
Yeah, Aria runs a website. It is basically it's like Yelp. For cryptocurrencies, it's a community-based cryptocurrency rating site, and each week on Call to Freedom, we investigate a different coin, and we try to get developers.
It's a Wednesday thing, right?
Every Wednesday, we bring in a developer from a coin, and we put them through the ringer. We spend 7 days reading the white papers, checking their trading volumes, researching stories about them, trying to contact developers, and we bring them in and we put them through the ringer. Basically, the idea is we want to protect the listener from scam coins and crap coins and, like, you know, those kind of things. Johnny come latelys that are selling ideas rather than results, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And we want to protect consumers from that rather than have the government regulate the cryptocurrency industry.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
You're concerned with the centralization of mining in the world of cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, that's something we've actually talked about a couple of times, and you and I have actually, we've disagreed on whether or not it's something that's really happening or whether or not it's a problem.
Well, it's kind of like the people who say that Microsoft is a monopoly, and it's like, no, they're not. They may have the majority of the market share in certain areas, like in personal computing, but they don't have the majority of the market share in business computing. And even if they did have the majority of the market share there, they're still not a monopoly. So what does it mean to be decentralized? Well, there's not one corporation that runs Bitcoin. There's no company where you can call up, and if you got a problem with Bitcoin, you can't call somebody because there's nobody that runs Bitcoin that's one organization. It's just not like that. It's decentralized, meaning that anybody who wants to can mine Bitcoin. You just have to have the right equipment in order to do it. And generally these days, because there's so much competition in the mining sphere, again, because there's competition, that's another clue that it's decentralized. It's not centralized. But your argument is that, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, that because there are so few mining pools, that therefore it's centralized. Is that your argument?
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody would really argue that the mainstream media is not being centralized into a few hands.
I wanted to comment on the Bitcoin centralization or decentralization argument. And Ian, I've heard you mention this multiple times. You've kind of been in a bit of a disagreement with some of the other hosts about whether there's a threat to Bitcoin's decentralization aspect. And, you know, it's not really an objective thing. It's certainly an issue of that, you know, things can be more or less decentralized to a certain extent. But I mean, the idea that there's these really big Bitcoin exchanges in China where it's becoming, I don't want to say centralized, but it's becoming kind of focused on those large exchanges. I'm not one of those people that just screams about, you know, China this, China's that, China's taking over this. And obviously there's really simple economic reasons, like the availability of the hardware and especially the power, mm-hmm. especially near hydroelectric plants. But there is a threat to decentralization there, not because it's in China, but just because it's not geographically decentralized. So it's located in a certain area. It might be susceptible to, say, a certain natural threat.
The top four miners in Bitcoin and the top three miners in Ethereum control more than 50% of the hash rate.
Yeah, that's
true. Indeed, the entire blockchain for both systems can be determined by fewer than 20 mining entities. Mm-hmm. So you could literally, 20 mining entities, if they chose to work together, could take down the two highest market cap cryptocurrencies.
But why would they do that? There's no economic reason to do that. The economic incentive is to continue to mine. You don't want to take down the currency because then you're going to lose all your value.
I think the miners have us all, the Bitcoin miners have us all held hostage right now with the fees.
Well, the fees are not the miners' fault. The miners are just—they're just doing their mining operations. The fees are the fault of the programmers of Bitcoin Core, who have refused to actually fix their broken coin to make it so there are no significant fees. Because they could do that if they wanted to, and they refuse to do that. So you can't blame the miners for just doing what they've been doing the whole time.
Are the fees not based upon the the idea that the miners won't mine it if they can't make money.
No, the fees are based on the fact that the network is full.
Basically, these 20 mining outfits decide, or can decide, if they decided to work together, what does and does not happen on that blockchain.
Yeah, I'm counting at least 17 Bitcoin pools here on the blockchain pools page. So there's at least 17 of them just in this pie chart.
Well, no, they're talking about like the strength of the hash rate, how much control they have over the hash rate.
Yeah, in this case, there's 17. The whole hash rate's divvied up by those. There's big players. There's like a top three that control more than 51%.
Yep.
And then there's like, you know, a top five that control 75% of this. So that's, you know, there's definitely a few big players that are competing here.
Now,
but the fears are about cartelizing, right? That's the fear?
Not only that, but you could have, say during the Bitcoin Cash, the attempt at the Bitcoin Cash takeover, mm-hmm. say the top three Bitcoin mining outfits decided to work together and just switch all their mining effort away from Bitcoin to Bitcoin Cash. It would crash the Bitcoin market. The programming is also centralized.
But that's not true either. And the reason why it's not true is because anybody can fork off and do their own Bitcoin. So
Bitcoin
the programmers
itself, the coin, Bitcoin, is centralized. Bitcoin Cash may not be. You can make Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Pizza and Bitcoin Atom and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's true. But that doesn't change that a group of people got together and took an idea that was about setting it free.
Yep.
And instead decided, no,
I'll agree with you.
Let's take control. We'll make more money if we take control.
But that doesn't have to do with
the
miners.
Crypto market hostage.
Right. That's okay. So they're not holding the crypto market hostage because anybody can fork
Bitcoin
and make their own copy of it. But Bitcoin itself, the original, what's now, let's call it Bitcoin Core, to be clear, BTC,
mm-hmm.
Bitcoin Core was absolutely taken over by people who do not agree with the original vision of Bitcoin as proposed by Satoshi Nakamoto, the original founder. There's no doubt about that. Now, there's also more information that some people would say that it was all being done by the big banks that funded a company called Blockstream. There's the company that funds a lot of the big name programmers behind Bitcoin Core. A lot of them get a paycheck from this company called Blockstream. Well, Blockstream apparently, from what I understand, got over $100 million from some big old European bank or something like that. AXA is the name of that bank. And I don't know where they're based out of, but that's who it was. Is the Bitcoin in jeopardy of having some sort of traumatic thing happen to it, like a takeover or a shutdown or whatever?
It's happened to other currencies.
Yeah, but Bitcoin is not as subject to being taken over because there are still competition. There are still competitors for the mining operations, whereas many of these smaller currencies are very, very small as far as their mining potential is concerned. There's just not that many people doing the mining there, so it's easier for a big player to come in and swing 51% of the hash rate.
We're not talking about a big player, though. We're talking about the possibility of three big players, and that's...
It's fear-mongering. It's fear, uncertainty, and doubt. I mean, it could happen, but what you're talking about there is a cartel, and we know that cartels tend to not stay together because of greed in a lot of cases. Because one, you know, the classic example of a cartel is what, the three gas stations on the corner, you know, you got three gas stations on, an intersection, and they all three agree to raise prices together. But then one of them decides they want to get more business than the rest of them, so they break the cartel and lower their prices by a cent. And then the cartel's broken, and then all of a sudden,
race to the bottom.
You got competition on prices again. So cartels don't tend to last very long. But beyond that, even if it did happen, even if the top three Bitcoin miners did get together and say, "All right, we're taking this puppy over," well, then say goodbye to all your profits.
So China decides that you've got the majority of Bitcoin Cash, you've got the majority of Bitcoin, so you've got the two biggest Bitcoin chains that are out there, and China comes in and take. Now you have the two of the top three cryptocurrencies, and they're now controlled by the Chinese government. Now mining cryptocurrency and using cryptocurrency is suddenly treason in the U.S.
Well, I don't know about that, but regardless, there are another 1,400 cryptocurrencies out there. There's a top 100, and any one of those top 100 currencies would love to have the hash rate of Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. So a bunch of those people who are mining with the Chinese miners in a mining pool, they can just flip over to mine Digibytes, or they can flip over to mine, Dash or whatever.
I guess you have more faith in people than I do, because to me, if $15 and $17 transaction costs are not going to cause the mass flipping then I just don't see the Chinese government being in control,
because so
people
early.
Are loving and lapping up the Ripple, knowing that it's, you know, fed.gov.coin.
Yeah, they just want to make money. They think they're going to make money on it.
See, finding out that the Chinese government is in control of the blockchain, stopping people and saying, no. "Whoa, you know what? I'm just going to start using Verge."
Probably not. But I don't worry about it. There's no point in worrying about it. This one's coming from thedailybeast.com, and it's about some interesting studies that have been done on folks that are terminally ill and giving them access to psychedelic drugs that have historically been prohibited here in the United States and in many countries around the world, like psilocybin, the active chemical in psychedelic mushrooms, or LSD, you know, which, of course, a lot of people are familiar with from the 1960s. And these are things that if you get caught with them, you were probably going to get hit with felony charges. So it's very, very hard to do studies on these things. But surprisingly, there actually have been some studies that have been done, and they've had some really interesting results. Here's the story from the Daily Beast. I'm skipping ahead to the actual information here about the studies. So in a study that took a full decade to complete, and with the approval of the FDA and the DEA and a host of institutional review boards, Charles Graub at Harbor UCLA Medical Center assessed the use of psilocybin, which is the active compound in magic mushrooms, as a standalone treatment for the reactive anxiety and depression that attends death due to terminal cancer. Normally, when you're looking at the medical system and its treatments that they have, it's like, okay, you get on a drug regimen, you got to take your pills 3 times a day, make sure you don't miss a dose, make sure you show up for your chemotherapy, you know, however often you need to have it. This is one treatment, 6 months.
I think you just described why there's only one state looking at possibly making psilocybin legal, and only one state where there is a moderate amount of legal access to psilocybin, and that's California.
That's right. They are considering a bill. Well, or actually, not a bill. It's a voting. They're going to do a referendum. They're trying to get signatures.
You already have access to legally to psilocybin in California.
How's that?
Well, there are certain parks where, according to my mother's last husband, the mushrooms actually grow.
That's not legal access. It just means you can
eat them in the park, but if you take them and pick them and leave with them, then they will arrest you.
I'm pretty sure it's possession even if you pick them. If they happen to watch you pick them or catch you while you're picking them, then you will be in possession of psilocybin mushrooms. And make sure, by the way, you know what the hell you're doing. Don't just go out there.
You can kill yourself.
You will kill yourself or harm yourself significantly if you go out picking mushrooms and you don't know what the hell you're doing. Even people that know what they're doing can get the wrong mushrooms.
Yeah, because you have some that look literally almost identical.
I mean, I don't know how many thousands of different potential, you know, species or genesis or whatever they are of mushrooms there are, but there are a lot of them. According to the story here at thedailybeast.com, they not only found long-lasting effects when they tested psilocybin, but also using LSD as the hallucinogen. Peter Gasser in Switzerland showed that 12 cancer patients also showed short- and long-term benefit with no persistent side effects beyond the day of the study itself. Further studies have corroborated these beneficial effects up to 14 months out from the initial dose. So you have a very permanent kind of effect compared to a lot of, you know, whatever treatments these folks have been going through. The studies do provide another line of reasoning to support the assertion that our brains are being hacked, says the Daily Beast, that our emotions are just the inward expression of biochemical processes in the brain. In the case of hallucinogens, signaling of the serotonin 1A receptor drives contentment, whereas signaling of the serotonin 2A receptor drives the mystical experience. In our modern society, the role of mind-altering drugs to achieve heightened consciousness and or contentment has yet to be determined and will require careful scientific investigation in controlled settings, along with philosophical and ethical debate before the public can be trusted with the key to nirvana. Well, the fact is, if anybody in the public wants to get their hands on these drugs, all they got to do is know the right people or go on the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it really isn't a complicated thing. And in fact, now that we have darknet markets on the internet, the fact is you are much more likely, if you're buying on the internet, much more likely to actually get what's being advertised.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.